Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Good afternoon, America. Actually, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Lots and lots to talk about. I don't know that I'll get it all done today. First up, we're going to have Michelle Richardson. She is the legislative consultant for the American Civil Liberties Union. And she's someone who's going to talk about the revisions to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. This is basically the thing that has allowed Bush to do warrantless wiretapping. And you're going to want to hear what she has to say. But there's a lot of other news as well. We've got everything from the judge in the contempt trial that Congress has held for Harriet Myers and for Josh Bolton. As you know, I have long argued that they should go to jail, that the easiest way is for Congress simply to grab them on their own and to put them in prison inside the Capitol. And the judge agrees with me, lo and behold. We'll get to that. Also, things like the Supreme Court ruling that a child rapist cannot get the death penalty. Let's see if we can talk about that. And the fact that John McCain wants terrorists to attack the United States. He thinks it will help his campaign, or at least his campaign manager does, Charlie Black. Oh, the Gaza truce is broken. We've got scandal at Justice. It turns out what I've said all along, they were hiring people based on their political views rather than based on competence. So we've got a whole bunch of flunkies who know nothing about justice, nothing about the law, but everything about loyalty to the administration. This is a scandal, by the way, that we never would have known about if we hadn't forced Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez from office, because he's the one who did this all. And now it's all like everything in the Bush administration. We discover the scandal. First they deny it. Then they say it didn't go as far as we say it did. Then they said there's no evidence of it. Then they fire the person and say it has nothing to do with the scandal. And then 2 years later we find that, of course, everything was as we said it originally. And then the Bush administration says it's old news. That is true with this justice scandal. We're going to go into detail about that. There's just so much to talk about. And that, not, you know, of course, there's the Valdez ruling finally coming down after all these years. So much, so much. There may not be enough time today, but that's okay. There's always tomorrow as well. So if you want to call in and join in the discussion, it's easy to do. The toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. My first up, of course, is Michelle Richardson, the legislative consultant for the ACLU. The ACLU, you'd think they'd be on the ball, but they gave the wrong phone number, so we're working to get her on the line. Before I get her, though, let's talk about the quote by Charlie Black. I'm sure you've heard of it by now. Charlie Black is basically the guy running the John McCain campaign, and he said that a new terrorist attack would be a big advantage to John McCain. This, I think, is frankly what Republicans have been hoping for a very long time. And when you think about it, all the president has to do is to withhold a bit of evidence to make the attack a little bit more likely, and he could create a Republican president. Now, one could say that's a treasonous act, but given that Dick Cheney was willing to sacrifice national security, was willing to out a CIA agent, risk many, many American lives in order to simply to try to smear a political opponent telling the truth, well, it shouldn't be any surprise that they could do the same thing in a political campaign. I want to get to that, but first I want to go to Michelle Richardson to talk about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act revisions. Michelle, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Now, you're the legislative consultant for the ACLU?
Yes.
Okay, so you know all the ins and outs and details of this compromise legislation. Now, just to remind my listeners what was happening before, this is legislation. The old legislation, which I was fervently opposed to, did two awful things. One of the things it did is it said that Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is no longer the exclusive means for the president to wiretap people abroad. So basically, the president could do whatever he wants. He could do any kind of warrantless wiretapping. And the other thing that it did that I didn't like, the original version, was it gave a retroactive immunity to the telecommunications companies that were asked by the president to break the law and did so at his request. Now, my understanding of the compromise is actually it sort of splits it in half. We get good law for the future while we get bad law for the past. In other words, we overlook the law breaking in the past, but at least it seems like we're okay for the future. Is that a fair analysis, or is it worse than that?
Oh, it's worse than that.
Okay, no, fair enough. Tell me why. Let's start with the future, because most of the time we talk about the telecommunications companies and the retroactive immunity. We'll get to that. That's the part that's most in the news. Let me go to the part that isn't in the news. My understanding was, correct me if I'm wrong, that at least in the future, the president could only spy on Americans with a warrant or before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Isn't that at least a victory?
Well, that's not actually what the bill says. Its proponents are definitely trying to sell it that way, but they're forgetting to mention that. While, yes, if they want to target you, if they want to put your phone number into the computer and collect everything that you do, yes, they have to get a warrant. However, this bill, the whole purpose of this bill, is to set up a new parallel program that collects all international communications coming into and going out of the United States, even when an American person is on one end. Now, there is no warrant connected with those programs. It is true that the bill tells them that they should go to the secret FISA court and make an application. However, that application is broad, it's general, it's about general targeting and collection procedures, and it won't actually tell the court who's being tapped, what's being done with the information, or even which companies are going to be participating. So that annual programmatic court review really cannot be called a warrant for the purposes.
Well, let me back up here, just so I can understand what the scope of the program is, because I know that before the compromise, it basically had no scope. The president could do whatever he wanted. Now, the proponents of the compromise are saying, okay, for American citizens, let's start with American citizens in the United States. These are the people that one would think would get the greatest protection of all, right? They're citizens and in the United States. For them, this act doesn't apply. Is that right?
Though that's not true. It applies to everyone, yeah. FISA used to have special protections for people on U.S. soil, longer. Under this program, people in the United States and people abroad are treated the same in that they can be swept up in these dragnets of internet communications for foreign intelligence purposes.
Even American citizens on U.S. soil?
Yes.
And they don't need a warrant?
They don't need a warrant. They just have once a year generalized court review of procedures of collection, but not what we would call a warrant under the Fourth Amendment. Probable cause to believe that someone has done something wrong, a statement that particularly describes the people or places or things to be searched, so it's completely insufficient for Fourth Amendment purposes going forward. Proponents are not telling their constituents this. They're hiding this fact from them, and we're just trying to get the word out to let people know that this bill going forward it's awful. It's basically the Senate bill that we saw last year. There are some cosmetic changes in it, but fundamentally we're still talking about mass untargeted collection on American soil.
Does this mean that everyone's internet use, again, I'm not talking about criminals that they have probable cause to get a warrant for. I don't think anyone, even the ACLU, I think, concedes that if you have reason to believe, reasonable probable cause to believe someone's committed a crime, you folks would have no trouble getting a warrant. That's what the Fourth Amendment allows. I mean, right?
Right.
That's fair. But we're talking about people who we have no probable cause to believe have committed a crime. My understanding from, the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi and those that made the compromise was that it basically retroactively allows the law breaking, and we'll get to that in a second. But in the future, at the very least for American citizens, there are protections. Now, are these protections real or fake or partial? What are the protections and why don't they protect everybody?
Well, we just put up a very detailed analysis on our website, ACLU.org. And the protections that are currently in the bill are that during this once-a-year review, the court will look at general procedures that are supposed to ensure that basically the calls are actually international and not purely domestic, and at what they call minimization rules, which is how the government decides to use your information once it has it. So Nancy Pelosi and another proponents are saying that those reviews are going to be enough to protect our information, and we could not disagree more. We want real Fourth Amendment review, which is courts looking at evidence and determining someone has done something wrong before the government can go ahead and snoop into their lives. It's very
Let's go back to – no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's very unclear, you know, how much detail the courts are going to get in this annual procedural review. But looking at this administration's track record, who thought it could go all the way around the court anyways, it's very unlikely that the court will have enough information and will really know what the government is doing with our communications.
Let me back up to the most controversial thing, if I can, and because that's of course, it's troubling what you say about the future. I thought that was the good part of the bill. Let's talk about the worst part. The worst part is, of course, the retroactive immunity. Back in 2002, the president, again, correct me if you think I'm wrong, the president asked a number of telecommunications companies, virtually every American telecommunications company, to spy on various individuals, Americans and foreign individuals, without a warrant. And some of the companies said, hey, Mr. President, is this legal? And he said, don't worry about it, just do it. And all of them except Quest did it. And Quest said, Mr. President, where's your warrant? He said, I don't have one, just do it. And Quest said, well, we need a warrant. And so Quest refused, and everyone else participated. And now the ones that participated are worried about lawsuits and want immunity for them. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. So, and Quest was actually punished, I believe, by the administration for refusing to break the law.
Yes.
Okay.
That's
so
our understanding, too.
Now, there are lawsuits that are seeking to get, I guess, compensation or at least knowledge of what the scope of this program was. The president has hinted that the scope of the program was just terrorists and just foreigners. What do we know, or maybe we just don't know, but what do we know about the scope of that original program, the one that the telecommunications companies now want retroactive immunity for?
Well, you know, you bring up a really good point. It's been over 2.5 years, and we have learned almost nothing about what the so-called terrorist surveillance program actually collected, who was tapped, and what was done with that information. And it's really just heartbreaking that Congress is coming along now, 2.5 years later, without any real information. And first of all, as we just discussed, basically rubber stamped that program going forward and actually gave the president even more authority than what he admitted to doing under the TSP. And now is going to actually kill these cases. The president has claimed that the scope of the TSP was that they were
the terrorist surveillance program. Just to be clear, that's what they called it. All right, TSP. Go ahead.
Was picking up communications where one party was a member of Al-Qaeda. Now, if one
that's what he claimed. Is there any evidence that's true?
You know, we don't have any public accounting. Congress has never released any information, and now that these cases are going to be killed, we may never get it.
Did he tell the congressional intelligence committees at least?
Our understanding is that the intelligence committees have been fully briefed on the program. I'm not sure if they've seen all of the legal documentation that the Justice Department put out over the last 7 years to support that program. But we do.
I wonder how
that
they can know if they're fully briefed, given that the president simply selectively gives them a few documents, and they have no subpoena power, and there's no testimony, even in secret. I'm not talking about public testimony. How can they know they've been fully briefed?
I don't think they can, and this administration has outright lied to them in the past.
Give me some examples of that lying.
For example, this past August, when the Protect America Act passed, that was, we found out after the fact, largely due to the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, coming in and holding secret briefings and telling these members that they expected an attack on the Capitol during the August recess, so it was absolutely critical that the members pass something before they left. And
wow.
Leave us
that they expected it. Now, was there any intelligence, actual intelligence behind that, or was that his pure speculation?
Oh, it's worse than having no evidence. They had evidence, and they had already discredited it and knew it was bad intelligence, and they spread it.
So like, it's like curveball. There was some nut said they might do it. They looked it up. They realized, okay, this is not credible. This is ridiculous. It's not true. And after they already discredited it, then they told Congress?
Yes.
Amazing. Now let me get back to the retroactive immunity. As I understand it, the way it was going to work is to find out, frankly, who the president was spying on. People would bring these lawsuits. And that because the state, the government, has sovereign immunity, the state, like the king, thinks it can't be sued. I don't agree with that principle, but it's been around the law a while. They were going to sue the telecommunications companies as a way to find out what the government was doing. There's an old thing I learned in law school that basically says if the sheriff breaks in your house and he has a warrant, you better do what he says and he's the law. But if the sheriff breaks in your house and he doesn't have a warrant, he's the criminal. And if you want to stop him, you got to go after the sheriff. You got to, in other words, sue the sheriff, sue the telecommunications companies to find out what the government is doing. Now that the telecommunications companies are off the hook, some Democrats, and I shouldn't just say Democrats, some supporters of the compromise are saying, well, we can still sue the government. Is that right, or does that seem to be wrong?
Well, I guess when you want to enforce accountability on these companies, it's really neither here nor there that we could still sue the government.
Can you still sue? I mean, can you effectively sue and find out what happened, or is it all just you sue and then it's dismissed?
Well, our case was dismissed for lack of standing, the case we brought in Detroit. We did get a favorable ruling at the district court level, and they found that the spying program did violate the Constitution and violated FISA, but we lost on appeal for standing reasons, and people are going to have problems going forward, no matter who they sue.
Let's talk about standing. I just want my listeners to understand, because we got some complicated legal concepts here. Standing is basically saying you may have a claim, you may have a right, someone's law, you know, the law may be violated, the Constitution may be violated, but the ACLU, you can't prove you were spied on, so you're just the wrong person to sue. Find the person that's
correct,
actually been spied on. But the problem with that is that we don't know because the whole thing's secret, right?
Correct. I don't believe there's anyone who can affirmatively prove that they were picked up in any of these spying programs. But what we can say is that we do have clients, lawyers and academics and journalists who have changed their behavior. And we said in that suit before the court in Detroit that these people were altering their behavior. It was interfering with them professionally and personally because they were afraid of being picked up in these dragnets.
So that would be, for example, someone afraid of using the Internet because they're afraid that their privacy might be violated, something like that?
Correct. And now that these cases are being dismissed, we're going to have a very hard time finding out what actually happened in that program. I mean, it's important to note that if this process were to have just gone forward, the court would have been able to make a ruling on whether the behavior was legal. It could have engaged in discovery and found out even maybe just some basic information about how it worked and how many people were involved. And then it could have ultimately directed the government not participate in these sorts of dragnet programs in the future, and that opportunity is completely lost if this bill passes the Senate and the president signs it.
Okay. We've lost the opportunity to punish this president for his lawbreaking with this bill. Now, does that mean that if we have a new president after he's no longer in office, we can at least hold hearings and find out what happened? Or is this information going to be lost forever if this bill's passed?
Well, we are going to encourage the new president and the new Congress, which we hope will be even more civil liberties friendly than the current one, to finally get to the bottom of this. Hopefully a new president will be more cooperative with Congress, who has issued subpoenas on this exact point and just has never been enforced. So next Congress, the next president, we will be going back to them to make them find out what really happened over the last 7 years and actually how the government will be using this new, broad, unconstitutional authority going forward, too.
Now many moderate Democrats argue that at least this bill is better than the last one, and I think that at least is a point you have to concede, right? That at least it's better than the one that they almost passed a few months ago. Is that fair?
Well,
better in terms of civil liberties,
original,
it protects a bit more.
Yes, it's better than the original Senate bill, but you know, we joke around.
But you don't think it's good enough? Let's talk about the difference.
It's just a little bit pregnant, just like, you know, if it's unconstitutional, it's constitutional.
Let's talk about the differences between it and the former bill. As I understand it, the part about exclusivity, the original FISA bill said that the president has to exclusively go through the FISA court. He can get a warrant through normal courts. He can go through the secret FISA court, but that was it. And then John Yoo, the legal advisor to the president, wrote a memo that said exclusive doesn't really mean exclusive. It means I can say whatever I say it means. And this legislation says, no, it says exclusive, and we really mean it, and shut up, John Yoo. Is that kind of what it says?
It does, but honestly.
We mean it this time. We do. This time we mean it. Can't the president just say, well, they didn't really mean it again, you know, as we did last time.
Exactly. It really is sort of irrelevant to the larger debate for two reasons. One, if the president believes his Article II authority gets him out of complying with the laws Congress passes, there's no way that they can write something that will change his mind. So no matter how you phrase it, if you fundamentally believe you don't have to listen to Congress, they're not going to listen to Congress. But
the only way they could punish him would be impeachment.
Right.
I guess.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's the only – I guess they could start holding some of his cabinet members in prison for failing to respond to their subpoenas. I think they should reopen that basement prison in the Capitol. I think they could really fill it up pretty full. They need to devote some room to it. But other than those two things, basically, if the president continues to thumb his nose at Congress, they can't do a thing except impeachment and holding authorities in contempt, right?
Well, you know, we would encourage them to hold hearings, to go ahead and keep subpoenaing this information, pursuing that in court, using their inherent contempt authority, if at all possible, and really just not let this go to get real information and hopefully hold these people accountable someday.
Now, the bill, the proponents of the compromise say that it really does protect Americans, that the whole reason for the bill, they say, was because we wanted to spy on foreigners talking to foreigners, even when it came through American exchanges, and that we didn't think that non-citizens outside the United States deserved constitutional rights. Do you think that non-citizens outside the United States deserve constitutional rights? I don't mean the ones that we pick up and hold in Guantanamo Bay. Okay, that's kind of different. We're holding them. But let's say you've got someone in England talking to someone in Afghanistan, and neither is an American citizen, and they're just talking to each other. Is it the ACLU's position that you can't spy on that conversation?
Oh, absolutely not. Everyone agrees that foreign-to-foreign communications that are just incidentally routed through the U.S. because that's how the wires are hooked up nowadays, those do not need warrants. Those people do not.
Okay, even
rights.
The ACLU agrees that they don't need warrants.
And we supported bills that were narrowly drafted to that purpose in the last Congress and in this Congress to achieve that. However, that is not what this bill does. The bill we're looking at today is explicitly written, and it specifically intends to pick up calls where one end is in the United States. So those folks overseas, no, they don't have rights. But the Americans that they talk to on the other end of those calls, they do. And their Fourth Amendment rights don't go out the window.
I'm just wondering, the Americans, the people on U.S. soil, is there any distinction between American citizens and non-citizens, or is it they treat them the same?
Treat them the same.
So basically, any call outside the United States that any American citizen makes could be monitored without a warrant.
Correct. It can now be swept up in these giant dragnets that don't target any one person. And that could be, you know, calling your daughter who's in study abroad for the semester. That can be calling your son who's serving in Iraq. That could be when you call Microsoft and your phone call just happens to be routed to a service center overseas. There's a lot of ways that your communications can be picked up through this dragnet that are completely innocent.
Is this dragnet something where they sort of screen 2 billion phone calls and look for someone that uses the word bomb? Oh, they're listening in now. Hi, Mukasey, welcome to the Inside Scoop. No, I mean, do you use the word bomb or use the word terrorist or whatever, and so you could say she's the bomb and boom, you're being recorded? Is that how it works?
Well, that's the horrible thing. We have no idea. We don't know. There's never been an accounting for what they're actually doing with this mass amount of data, whether, like you said, they're mining it for certain words or patterns or codes, whether they're actually recording it all and keeping it for later, whether they are actually listening to some of it in real time. And we have no idea actually how it's used once it gets into the hands of the government.
Isn't the FISA court overseeing this? Aren't they supposed to, the secret FISA court?
Well, under the Protect America Act, no, they did not. Going forward, if this bill passes, the court will review once a year general procedures for wiretapping. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're actually going to have any information about how the program really works. They won't know, for example, what companies are participating. They won't know which facilities the governments are actually tapping into. And they won't get an accounting of how many Americans are actually being picked up in the dragnet.
Well, let me ask you this. An American calling an American, both on American soil, are those conversations at least protected except under Fourth Amendment warrant type, you know, procedures? If you don't have probable cause and someone in Seattle calls someone in Miami, is that at least protected?
That should be protected under FISA's traditional procedures that would require an individualized warrant to pick up.
Okay.
So
that's the one privacy
call
we have left.
Privacy we have left. But there's, you know, there's really no assurance that you still might not inevitably be swept up. If, for example, let's say you're using voice over internet phone calls, that's a
right
new service.
Sure.
If that is routed outside of the U.S., your domestic phone call is now no longer purely domestic and can be picked up in this dragnet.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that it's interesting. The administration insists that if a foreigner calls a foreigner and it just happens to go through a U.S. switcher, you know, from London to Paris via New York, we can listen on that conversation and everyone agrees. Even the ACLU agrees that's okay. But now they're saying that if Washington, D.C. calls New York and it goes through Mexico City and it's just an American talking to an American, they can listen? Is that right?
Well, you know, as long as the program in general is targeted outwards and has an international component and isn't actually targeting in on any American in specific, then yes, it can be swept up. And
what does that mean, targeted outwards or targeted inwards?
What the court is actually reviewing and what the government is actually saying is just that it is targeted in general at people overseas.
Okay,
that's
so you have to be searching for someone overseas, and if in the meantime you get all these American citizens swept up, that's life. One of the things that I found really troubling in the bill, though, is that even if you unconstitutionally take Americans, and it's proven in a court or anywhere else that you've unconstitutionally spied on Americans, if you do so inadvertently, like, oops, I accidentally spied on you, then you can still use those in a court of law. Is that right?
Well, yes. Under the current bill, those backdoor protections no longer apply. If you go back to the old original FISA, if they made a mistake, they had to fix it immediately. They had to stop the tap once they realized there was a mistake. For example, even if they wanted to do an emergency tap and the court says, no, this isn't a real emergency, you haven't met the requirements, they'd have to stop. They'd have to notify the person that they had been tapped. And then they couldn't use or distribute that information for any purpose. On the other hand, we now have a program where let's say, if they go ahead and start in an emergency program, if the court says no, they get to continue tapping for up to 60 days, and they get to keep and use all the information that they collected in the meantime.
They get to keep and use it even if it was illegal?
Even if it was illegal. There are no backdoor protections here that would give the government the incentive to really think twice before it does emergency taps or some of these other authorities.
So, Michelle, where do we go from here? I know the House passed the bill, the compromise bill. Russ Feingold, Senator of Wisconsin, and Senator Dodd of Connecticut, they have threatened to filibuster at least the retroactive immunity portion for the telecommunications companies. And I know that the majority leader, Harry Reid, will join in that filibuster, but he's still going to bring it to the floor. What are the prospects? Are we going to be able to defeat this by filibuster, or is this pretty much a foregone conclusion?
Well, we're never going to give up, and we encourage
okay.
your callers not to give up either. We don't know exactly when the vote on the bill will be. It had originally been planned for tomorrow, but because of all the different bills that the Senate is dealing with now, it's very possible that the final Senate vote will be delayed until after their 4th of July recess.
Well, that would give people time to mobilize opposition, I would think.
And we would definitely use that time while they're back at home celebrating the 4th of July to have their constituents go back to them and say, hey, we know what's in this bill. We know it's not about foreigners. And we don't want you to compromise our rights this way.
And just to be clear, and this was very interesting to me, the ACLU has no problem with the administration or the government spying on foreigners talking to foreigners that go through American switches. The problem that the ACLU has is when the Americans get spied on without the protections of the Fourth Amendment.
Correct. We have always supported fixing that foreign-to-foreign problem. And all advocates, all Republicans and Democrats agree that that should be fixed if that is truly a problem. And there have been a number of different bills introduced that would have done that narrow fix and would have done a lot of other things too, like give the government more resources and lawyers and judges to actually process applications.
I'm curious, has Pelosi and Reid allowed those bills, the narrow fix as you call it, come to the floor for a vote?
Absolutely not.
They have not.
Absolutely not.
So really all we're asking the Democratic leadership is to allow these bills to come for a vote, the narrow fix, the fix that allows us to spy on foreigners, which even the ACLU doesn't contest, but still protects Americans' rights under the Constitution.
Correct. Correct.
That's a very important point and one that I hope that you will emphasize and I hope that my listeners will emphasize when they call their member of Congress. I happen to know the number by heart because I used to work there, 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121. That's the number that will get you to your senator or to your member of the House. I know it goes to the Senate next, but that's not necessarily the end of the bill, right? It could come back to the House?
Well, we have been told that this is it. This is the final bill.
Oh.
And if amendments offered to strip out immunity fail, bills will be identical, so it will be ready for presidential signature.
So we could strip out the immunity. That's really what the big fight is about. In other words, whether the president's past illegal actions under the Constitution will be protected or whether people will be allowed to investigate why the president broke the law, how he broke the law, and punish him for breaking the law.
Yes.
So basically, to get out of jail free card, that's what we're voting over, right? Whether the president's past illegal violations should be allowed or we'll just, we'll give it a pass. The Constitution doesn't mean so much. Let's move on. That's what it's about.
Right. And it's important to note that, you know, it really takes two to tango. It's not just the government violating our rights here, but these companies too. And if they are given a get out of jail free card, they're really not going to have much incentive to protect our information in the future when the government comes to them with a wink and a nod and asks them to bend or break the rules again. There has to be an incentive to follow the law, and that's precisely why FISA includes civil liability protections. It's precisely for a situation like this where the government is complicit in the spying and there's really no recourse except for citizens to go to court, take the matter into their own hands, and assert their own rights.
But, Michelle, Nancy Pelosi shook her finger and said, this is a one-time thing. Don't you ever do it again. She did. I saw it.
Well, actions speak louder than words. You know, when we found out that this was all going on in the 70s, Congress did the right thing. They had an entire commission delve into what happened and publish tens of thousands of pages of findings. And then they passed a very strict, clear, bright-line law prohibiting that behavior going forward. And we have the exact opposite here. Again, these companies were caught, and the government was caught, spying on Americans without any cause. And instead of finding out what happened and stopping it, they actually buried the truth, had a couple of closed-door hearings with the government, and then rubber-stamped that same behavior going forward.
Michelle Richardson, thank you very much for coming on the Inside Scoop. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Folks, if you want to call in on this topic or any of the others I mentioned at the top of the hour, it's easy to do. The toll-free number is 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Justice Kennedy came to the rescue again, this time to outlaw capital punishment for all cases except intentional murder. As in the Guantanamo habeas corpus case, his was the decisive vote here, and he wrote the majority decision in this child rape case out of Louisiana. Now, while no one can doubt the disgusting depravity and the devastating harm of child rape, the court properly recognized the unique irrevocability of murder and underscored the dangers of applying the death penalty to other crimes. Kennedy noted that the testimony of children also in rape cases is often unreliable, induced, and even imagined, and therefore creates a special risk of wrongful conviction. Kennedy recognized that if the court allowed the death penalty in this instance, a significant number of additional executions could ensue, and he added, evolving standards of decency counsel the court to be most hesitant before allowing extension of the death penalty. I, for one, believe that the death penalty is morally wrong in every single instance, even for intentional murder. So I applaud Justice Kennedy's courageous decision in this case, and I can't help but noticing how thin the majority remains on the court right now. The court does indeed hang in the balance. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. That was a fascinating conversation with Michelle Richardson of the ACLU. It's clear, and I think it should be clear, that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act compromise is better than what was originally proposed 3 months ago, but it hasn't gone far enough. It is better. The Democrats, I thought, were going to cave in then, and they didn't. And let's talk about the ways it is better. Making clear that it hasn't gone far enough. It's better because it makes clear that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is exclusive. In other words, the president must get a warrant under the Fourth Amendment or he has to go under the law. He can't just make up stuff. In fact, he has to even specify the legislative authority that he's using. Now, in the earlier version, the administration could basically do what he wants. It was one way to spy on people, but not the only way. Now, of course, exclusivity, the idea that he had to follow the law, was in the original bill, and the president said he didn't have to. Now Congress is saying, we really, really mean it. Well, I guess it's better than what we had before. It's certainly better than Congress saying, we don't mean it. Do what you want. It is true that the bill does prevent targeting Americans. That's a plus. It didn't before. The idea that you can't target American citizens, you can't target people on American soil, you can't even target Americans abroad. Of course, as Michelle pointed out, you may not target them, but you can incidentally get them when you're monitoring the phone calls between Americans and foreigners. And then, if the court finds you did it illegally, you could still use it. There are still, no question, problems with the bill. The worst problem of all, is that it retroactively says to the president, you broke the law, it's okay. We forgive you. You spied on hundreds of millions of Americans. You created the East German police state. We'll let it go. No war crimes tribunals. No impeachment. We won't even find out what happened. If we found out what happened and the American people knew about it, well, they might be upset. But we can't let them know the truth. That would upset them. It would upset them to know that all their phone calls to their grandmother have been spied on. So we won't find out about it. We won't find out about it because the only way to find out about it was that telecommunications companies that did it would be sued. They'd be turned in. Well, now basically the rule is the telecommunications company is, well, you know, you broke the law, but we'll let you go this time. As John Conyers put it, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee who opposes the FISA compromise, companies should be on notice that the Congress is very reluctantly providing this defense as a one-time action in an extremely unusual circumstance. It expects private companies and citizens to provide assistance only when specifically authorized by law. Yeah, we're right. Well, in the future, do the right thing. Quote, for over 30 years, John Conyers writes, we have mandated that telecommunications carriers not be a merely unquestioning partner to surveillance activities. This bill provides many ways for the companies to question or challenge directives or requests for assistance, and we expect these to be used anytime there is something unusual or novel being requested. That's right, companies. In the future, when the president asks you to break the law, you better turn him down. Well, that's a plus over the past bill. But it doesn't change the fact that they broke the law this time. And the president broke the law this time. And the only thing the president fears more than liability for breaking the Constitution is knowledge of exactly the scope of how he violated the Constitution. That knowledge would make the Americans so angry that they would never vote for a Republican again. So I'm sorry the Democrats have done this compromise. I am. I understand the pressure. I understand all the Republicans saying, oh, there's going to be a terrorist attack, but they said that months ago. And to me, the most important part of the interview was Michelle's saying that even the ACLU is okay with a compromise that lets the U.S. spy on foreigners. You see, the Republicans are saying if we don't have this bill, we can't spy on foreigners talking to foreigners going through American switches. That's their argument. That's why we need it right away. That's why it's dangerous to go without it, they tell us. But the ACLU says we would support such a bill with a narrow fix. We're okay with spying on foreigners talking to foreigners. We just don't want to spy on Americans without a warrant. But that bill was never brought to the House floor. That bill was never brought to the Senate floor. So when you call your member of Congress, please ask him or her, ask your senator, to allow a bill with that narrow fix. The narrow fix, you can call it, the bill that lets us spy on foreigners talking to foreigners. But you think Americans should have constitutional rights. So many more things to talk about. It was fascinating to me when she mentioned that Congress has subpoenaed all this information but has failed to enforce its subpoenas. I have long argued that the only way to punish this president was, first of all, to get a Democratic Congress. Okay, we did that. And second of all, to have the Congress call the administration officials for hearings, to subpoena them. A subpoena is not a request. It is not a pretty please. It is not an engraved invitation. A subpoena is an order. It's a demand. It says, government officials, you appear before us or you go to jail. That's it. Don't pass go. Don't collect $200. You show up, you tell the truth, or you go to jail. Harriet Myers, who the president wanted to put on the Supreme Court, his attorney, she refused to show up. Chief of Staff Josh Bolten refused to show up. So Congress held them in contempt, as they should. There was a vote by the House of Representatives, 232-25, to hold them in contempt. Terrific. So was Harriet Myers and Josh Bolten frog marched to the Capitol and thrown in the Capitol jail? Well, there were a couple problems with that. One is the Capitol jail ceased to exist in the 1930s, but that's okay. They still have the sergeant at arms. They can still arrest these people and hold them in an office building. I have told you about this many, many times. It's called inherent contempt. It has been around since the beginning of the Constitution. It's been around more than 200 years, and Congress last used it in the 1930s. And the Supreme Court, it went all the way up to Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, of course they can do it. It's part of their inherent constitutional powers. So I went to John Conyers, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and I said, why don't you frog march Harriet Myers in handcuffs until she talks? I mean, this is important stuff here. Let's not forget what this is all about. This is all about the United States government under Bush and Cheney using the justice system, prosecutors, the criminal justice system for political reasons, using criminal justice system, the awesome power of the government to pick you up and throw you in jail, and they were doing it to punish Democrats and to let Republicans off the hook. They were, any prosecutor going after a Republican for bribery was fired. And prosecutors that didn't make up charges against Democrats, that didn't try to stop them from registering voting, didn't put an innocent man like Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama, in jail, those Democratic prosecutors were fired. Basically, it was about turning our criminal justice system into a one-man, well, several men and women, political operation for the Bush administration. Just as Richard Nixon barged in, or the Watergate burglars, G. Gordon Liddy, barged into the Democratic headquarters at the Watergate Hotel in 1972, this would be far, far greater political operation. This wouldn't be merely breaking into one building and looking at a little bit of information. This is sending out prosecutors all across the United States and telling them, we don't care what the law is. We don't care what the facts are. You put the Democrats in jail. And if Republicans break the law, you let them go. Amazing. And Harriet Myers was called to testify about it. And she said, no, sorry. My allegiance is not to the Constitution. My allegiance is not to Congress. My allegiance is not to the law. I'm a lawyer. I'm an American. My allegiance is not to America. It's to George W. Bush. Heil Bush. My Fuhrer says I cannot obey the law, and therefore, forget the law. Forget the law. Forget America. I don't give a damn about my country. My Fuhrer is above my country. George W. Bush is more important to me than my country and the law and the Constitution. And even though I've sworn to uphold the Constitution, I'm going to rip up that Constitution, burn it, in effect. Because when my president tells me to violate the law, I'll violate the law. I was just following orders. So Congress held Ms. Myers in contempt. It's fascinating, in fact, that the president wanted to put such someone who would so loyally break the law at his request on the Supreme Court. Congress held them in contempt. Now, there are two ways to hold someone in contempt. Actually, three. Three ways. The oldest way, the 200-year-old way, is to take the sergeant-at-arms, the police officer for the Capitol, the police officer for Congress. Congress has a police force, just like the Supreme Court does. They have U.S. Marshals, and of course the president's got a whole army. To take the congressional sergeant-at-arms, He's usually a portly guy in the back of the building. But, you know, he's got, 10, 20 people working for him. Take the sergeant-at-arms. He goes over to Harriet Meyer's house, and he says, "Madam, you're under arrest." He puts her in handcuffs. He takes her to the Capitol. Now, in the 19th century, there was a jail there, used often. Today, he'd have to put her in an office. That's okay. We have offices with locks on the doors in the Capitol. I've been there. Lock her up. Don't torture her. We feed her. We treat our prisoners fairly. But you lock her up until she follows the law. That's the way it was done for hundreds of years. And then in the 1930s, they decided, well, we can get a U.S. attorney to do it for us. We have a law, and the law says that whenever Congress holds someone in contempt, the U.S. attorney, who is a political appointee of the president for the District of Columbia, is required by law not to investigate, not to prosecute, not to look for evidence and prove beyond a reasonable doubt. No. Congress has already found these people guilty. The prosecutor's job was simply to execute congressional will. Pick them up, throw them in a D.C. jail until Congress says otherwise. And that's the way it was done for the last 80 years. But Bush went one step further. He said not only was he going to set Harriet Myers and Karl Rove and all of them to change the criminal justice system so that the prosecutors would only punish Democrats and would let guilty Republicans off the hook. No, he went further. He said to the U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, if you follow the law, if you follow the Constitution, if you do what you're required to do under the law, if you obey your oath, I'm going to fire you. And the U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia said, okay, I have no respect for the law. I have no respect for the Constitution. Heil Bush! He should have done it. He should have put them in jail, and he should have said, Mr. President, okay, I did what the law required me. I'm sorry that you ordered me not to do this, but the law required me to. And, you know, if you have a problem with that, Mr. Bush, you should fire me. Wouldn't that be interesting? But no, cowardly, he obeyed his president, and he betrayed his country. So Congress had two steps. Now that the U.S. attorney refuses to obey the law, it could do what it did in the 19th century, pick them up themselves, send the sergeant-at-arms, throw them in jail, or it made up this new thing. You see, that was seen as, rough. Harsh. Using force? Partisan? No. The president tortures people, but Congress is not going to use its power to put people in jail. No. No, as Congressman Sestak, who I brought on this show a few months ago, argued, no, that would be seen as partisan for Congress to uphold its rights under the Constitution. No, Congress decided to file a lawsuit. To go to the federal courts and to say to the federal courts, we have a right to throw these people in jail. Can we do so? Pretty please? Now, I argued with Congressman Sestak, and I said that's a bad idea. You know why it's a bad idea? Because Congress doesn't have to ask permission of anyone to enforce its inherent powers. Just as the president doesn't have to ask any permission when he orders troops around, he's commander-in-chief. Just as the U.S. Supreme Court doesn't have to ask permission when it declares a law unconstitutional, Congress doesn't have to ask permission when it holds someone in contempt. That is absolute, clear, unequivocal powers. It belongs to that branch alone. But Congress was a coward. To be fair, House Judiciary Chairman John Conyers agreed with me that my option, the old 19th century jail them in the Capitol option, was the better option, but he said he didn't have enough votes. Because of people like Congressman Joe Sestak, quote, moderate Democrats, unquote. So they filed a lawsuit. And the lawsuit went to a judge appointed by George W. Bush. The same judge, by the way, who used to work on the Whitewater investigation when he was a private attorney. So he worked for Ken Starr and looked for all kinds of dirty information on the Clintons. And then, of course, George Bush, loving that he was someone who tried to hurt the Clintons, put him on the court. Well, the court had a hearing just 2 days ago for this federal judge. Happened Monday. and they appeared before the judge, and the House said, we have a right to put these people in jail for contempt. And the president said, no. No right at all. Executive privilege, bunch of things that have never been done before. You know what the judge said? The judge said, well, Congress, you have the right to put them in jail. The sergeant-at-arms has that right. Why didn't you just do that? The judge, the Bush judge, the Ken Starr flunky, told Congress, you're a coward. I started to use a P word. Five letters, guess it. You're a coward. Just put him in jail. You don't need to go to me. I can't rule. It's exactly what I told Congressman Sestak would happen. He said, look, I can't decide between Congress and the United States. That's not my role. I'm the third branch of government. This is about the power of Congress. Don't ask me to decide. He said, do the right thing. You want to order the House Sergeant-at-Arms to arrest Myers? Do it. Don't bug me any. And if you have a real problem with it, vote for impeachment. This is what the Bush judge is saying. The Bush judge, in other words, isn't going to let Congress go and say, please, Mr. Judge, enforce our order. He's going to say, look, cowards, it's a congressional order. You want to enforce it? You know how to do it. You got a sergeant at arms. Pick her up, make her do the perp walk, and if she still won't go, if the president sends his military out and we have a true battle of sovereigns and Congress's police force is against the president's police force and they won't let her go and Congress demands it, then you know what you can do. It's a three-syllable word. It begins with an I. It ends with a T. And it started with a bill by Dennis Kucinich. It's called impeachment. Now, I have long argued that we can't possibly do impeachment until we get all the evidence, and we can't possibly get all the evidence until we get the subpoenas enforced. I mean, that's the only way to do it, to hold people in contempt. The only way to get the information is to get people to appear, and the only way to do it is to use force. I wonder what the cowardly congressman from Pennsylvania will say today. I'll call his office tomorrow. I'll let you know. My guess is they'll say, the congressman isn't available right now, and you're not a constituent. I'm also going to call John Conyers' office. If the judge is telling them to throw them in jail, maybe we should listen. If the Bush judge is finally telling them, a year after I first told them, that the only way to do it is to throw them in the Capitol, lock the doors, maybe they should do it. Maybe they should rebuild that old cell. We have lots of extra office space in the Capitol. I can think of a room that's got a bunch of unused furniture in it. You could put a few bars on it. You really don't need to. Simply a door that locks is all we need to enforce the law. Lots more I want to talk about. A lot of it's going to have to wait till tomorrow. I'm sorry. I do want to talk about the Supreme Court decision on the child rapist, the comment by Charlie Black on why the McCain campaign wants a terrorist attack. I want to talk about the breach of the truce in Gaza. I guess I didn't think it would last very long, but 3 days? 3 days? See what happens when you negotiate with Hamas? The deal is meaningless. I think they're going to have to go back into Gaza. And everything else, including the Valdez decision, which I know Bob's going to address, lots more. Tune into the Inside Scoop tomorrow, same time, same place, or comment on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. Next up, of course, is your hillbilly elitist, Bob Kincaid. For now, this is Mark Levine, signing off.